Chapter 12. Of money in loose cash, and who had consulted me as to the disposal of it, to invest it in our office. Can I give you any better proof of my opinion of its solvency? Did Bro persuade you in any way?
Yes, he certainly spoke to me. But he very honestly told me his motives, and tells them to us all as honestly. He says, "Gentlemen, it is my object to increase the connection of the office as much as possible. I want to crush all the other offices in London. Our terms are lower than any office, and we can bear to have them lower, and a great business will come to us that way. But we must work ourselves as well. Every single shareholder and officer of the establishment must exert himself, and bring us customers, no matter for how little they are engage them. That is the great point." And accordingly our director makes all his friends and servants shareholders. His very lodge porter yonder is a shareholder, and he thus endeavors to fasten upon all whom he comes near. I, for instance, have just been appointed over the heads of our gents, to a much better place than I held. I am asked down here, and entertained royally. And why? Because my aunt has £3,000 which Mr. Bro wants her to invest with us. That looks awkward, Mr. Titmarsh.
Not a whit, sir. He makes no disguise of the matter. When the question is settled one way or the other, I don't believe Mr. Bro will take any further notice of me. But he wants me now. This place happened to fall in just at the very moment when he had need of me, and he hopes to gain over my family through me. He told me as much as we drove down. "You are a man of the world, Titmarsh," said he. "You know that I don't give you this place, because you are an honest fellow, and right a good hand. If I had a lesser bribe to offer you at the moment, I should only have given you that. But I had no choice, and gave you what was in my power." That's fair enough. But what can make Bro so eager for such a small sum as £3,000? If it had been 10, sir, he would have been not a bit more eager. You don't know the city of London, and the passion which our great men in the share market have for increasing their connection. Mr. Bro, sir, would canvass and wheedle a chimney sweep in the way of business. See, here is poor Tid and his £20,000. Our director has taken possession of him just in the same way. He wants all the capital he can lay his hands on.
Yes, and suppose he runs off with the capital?
Mr. Bro, of the firm of Bro and Hoff, sir? Suppose the Bank of England runs off. But here we are at the lodge gate. Let's ask Gates, another of Mr. Bro's victims. And we went in, and spoke to old Gates. "Well, Mr. Gates," says I, beginning the matter cleverly, "you are one of my masters, you know, at the West Idlesex yonder?"
"Yes, sure," says old Gates, grinning. He was a retired servant, with a large family, come to him in his old age.
"May I ask you what your wages are, Mr. Gates, that you can lay by so much money, and purchase shares in our company?" Gates told us his wages, and when we inquired whether they were paid regularly, swore that his master was the kindest gentleman in the world. That he had put two of his daughters into service, two of his sons to charity schools, made one apprentice, and narrated 100 other benefits that he had received from the family. Mrs. Bro clothed half the children. Master gave them blankets and coats in winter, and soup and meat all the year round. There never was such a generous family, sure, since the world began. "Well, sir," said I to the captain, "does that satisfy you? Mr. Bro gives to these people 50 times as much as he gains from them, and yet he makes Mr. Gates take shares in our company."
"Mr. Titmarsh," says the captain, "you are an honest fellow, and I confess your argument sounds well. Now tell me, do you know anything about Miss Bro and her fortune?"
"Bro will leave her everything or says so. But I suppose the captain saw some particular expression in my countenance, for he laughed and said, "I suppose, my dear fellow, you think she's dear at the price. Well, I don't know that you are far wrong.
Why, then, if I may make so bold, Captain Fizjig, are you always at her heels?
Mr. Titmarsh, says the captain, I owe £20,000, and he went back to the house directly, and proposed for her. I thought this rather cruel and unprincipled conduct on the gentleman's part, for he had been introduced to the family by Mr. Tid, with whom he had been at school, and had supplanted Tid entirely in the great heiress's affections. Bro stormed, and actually swore at his daughter, as the captain told me afterwards, when he heard that the latter had accepted Mr. Fizjig, and at last, seeing the captain, made him give his word that the engagement should be kept secret for a few months. And Captain F. only made a confidant of me, and the mess, as he said. But this was after Tid had paid his £20,000 over to our governor, which he did punctually, when he came of age. The same day, too, he proposed for the young lady, and I need not say was rejected. Presently the captain's engagement began to be whispered about. All his great relations, the Duke of Doncaster, the Earl of Cinquebars, the Earl of Crabs, and C. came and visited the Bro family, the Hon. Henry Ringwood became a shareholder in our company, and the Earl of Crabs offered to be. Our shares rose to a premium, our director, his lady, and daughter were presented at court, and the Great West Didlisex Association bid fair to be the first assurance office in the kingdom. A very short time after my visit to Fulham, my dear aunt wrote to me to say that as he had consulted with her attorneys, Messrs. Hodge and Smithers, who strongly recommended that she should invest the sum as I advised. As he had the sum invested too, in my name, paying me many compliments upon my honesty and talent, of which, she said, Mr. Bro had given her the most flattering account. And at the same time my aunt informed me that at her death the shares should be my own. This gave me a great weight in the company, as you may imagine. At our next annual meeting, I attended in my capacity as a shareholder, and had great pleasure in hearing Mr. Bro, in a magnificent speech, declare a dividend of 6%, that we all received over the counter. You lucky young scoundrel, said Bro to me. Do you know what made me give you your place? Why, my aunt's money, to be sure, sir, said I, no such thing. Do you fancy I cared for those paltry £3,000? I was told you were nephew of Lady Drum, and Lady Drum is grandmother of Lady Jane Preston, and Mr. Preston is a man who can do us a world of good. I knew that they had sent you venison, and the deuce knows what. And when I saw Lady Jane at my party shake you by the hand, and speak to you so kindly, I took all Abednego's tales for gospel. That was the reason you got the place, mark you, and not on account of your miserable £3,000. Well, sir, a fortnight after you were with us at Fulham, I met Preston in the house, and made a merit of having given the place to his cousin. Confound the insolent scoundrel! Apostrophe said he. He my cousin. I suppose you take all old Drum's stories for true? Why, man, it's her mania. She never is introduced to a man, but she finds out a cousinship, and would not fail of course with that cur of a Titmarsh. Apostrophe said I, laughing, that cur has got a good place in consequence, and the matter can't be mended. Apostrophe so you see, continued our director, that you were indebted for your place, not to your aunt's money, but to my aunt's diamond pin. Lucky rascal, said Bro, poking me in the side and going out of the way. And lucky, in faith, I thought I was. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.